Hi, and welcome back. My name is Jack Register, and I am your host for the Organizing Therapist podcast. This is a podcast for behavioral health professionals of all varieties, whether you are a mid-level clinician, whether you're a psychiatrist, whether you are a peer support specialist, a case manager, whatever your role is in the behavioral health system. This is a podcast around how do we come together across all of our lines of difference and create some synergy around the needs that we all have, and how do we do that in a way that we can actually work together? So it gives us some common language to operate from. So I've been a clinician for over 20 years. I've also been a policy person at the state and federal level. I have actually lobbied at the state level and in Congress, and have done quite a bit of advocacy work and policy work in terms of being a scholar as well as a practitioner. So I sort of live in the middle space between practice and policy. I come to you today to talk about issues around scope of practice. How do we get permission to do what we do? What happens when another group steps forward and says, "Hey, I can do exactly what you guys do, and I don't have to have your training"? How do we fight back against that? How do we deal with issues around insurance companies or reimbursement partners saying, "Hey, because of this level of training, we can't reimburse you for whatever"? I wanted to spend some time today kind of talking about what does that look like? How does that show up? And why is it so difficult whenever we're trying to actually create some policy change? So first and foremost, there is no national standard in terms of a licensing credential for behavioral health folks. Many of our disciplines, I'm a social worker and an addictions person, I may have a credential that allows me to be recognized nationally at a certain level, but it is not a credential that licenses me to practice. Scope of practice is granted by states. This means it's granted by state statute. And while many of our state statutes are similar, they are not exactly the same across the discipline lines, which becomes super duper difficult whenever we're trying to create change and we're trying to demonstrate how we are alike and how we are different. Because anytime we go to make a change in the statute, and the profession or the organizing body opens up the statute for concern and conversation that legislative cycle. Anyone else who has standing, and in legislative terms, that means people who might have something to say about this particular scope of practice, can actually add in amendments that may potentially make it into the bill, which then potentially becomes law. And so the concern becomes whenever we're trying to create changes, it has to be done in minutiae, incremental kinds of ways. And for a lot of folks who are frustrated, incrementalism or that very slow approach to policy change is incredibly frustrating. Because there's not a national way of understanding who we are and how we're put together, there's also small differences state to state, even within disciplines, in terms of what the scope of practice looks like. So part of the concern is that we also want to maintain the nuances of our difference because each one of the disciplines in behavioral health brings something unique to the table of care that offers to our clients something specific that allows them to be able to gain and grow and become. Now, when we're talking about statutory authority, we're talking about licensed folks. People who are certified may go through a licensing board for certification, but let's say, for example, coaches do not have a regulatory body where they actually have to go and register with the state. They prove their credentialing through their processes of continuing education and certifications. So it can be really confusing when you have this whole pantheon of providers and different kinds of folks out there in terms of who has what particular scope and what's going on in the bigger puzzle. So as we start to create synergistic organizing strategies, we first have to come back to square one. What is it we're really trying to do? At the end of the day, no matter who people are, whether you are a case manager or whether you're a psychiatrist, whatever your role is, we are all here to make sure that people who are vulnerable, who need behavioral health care and addiction and mental health and intellectual and developmental disability services, are able to receive that care in holistic ways. And that those of us who actually provide the care can make a living doing so and not necessarily have huge amounts of debt in comparison to what our salaries are. So it becomes not only a workforce issue, but also a care-specific issue. The other piece that's really important when we're starting to get into this conversation from an interdisciplinary lens is making sure that we don't point fingers at each other and say, but I do what they do, so therefore we don't need them, right? So, for example, as a licensed social worker, a clinical social worker who has addiction experience, I can use my LCSW to treat addiction care. However, in many states in the country, in order to run an addictions program, in order to be seen as an addiction expert, you need that additional level and layer of the secondary license or credential in that state to practice as an addiction professional. We don't want to downplay one discipline over another because that's not going to work. And the other side is going to try and get us to do that. They're going to say, well, if we start doing all this kind of stuff, then we're going to have to do this for other folks, and that's going to change the game. Oftentimes in the world of policymaking, whatever happens with Medicare and Medicaid federally starts to then trickle down to the states in terms of what do insurance companies do in return. And oftentimes when they start looking at how is the pantheon of pricing going to happen, it actually starts with medical docs and psychiatry, psychology, and then it goes down to the master's disciplines and so on. So as we try and grow the capacity for everyone being able to have equal access, not only to billing services, but also equal access to representation in the care that they're providing, we have to be super careful that we don't step on the toes of other people. So part of the piece of this, and part of what I would recommend to the everyday practitioner who is trying to figure out, I don't know how to connect with others, I don't know how to figure out how to do things different in my work than what I'm doing now, and I feel really lost. So what I would say is start with the clinician's notebook. This is not specifically around notations of what kind of care and who the patient is or any of that, but to be more of a macro lens of what are the trends that you're seeing. So let's say, for example, that in trying to market your particular practice in your particular niche with your particular credentials, you keep running into a particular wall. So let's say that you can get referrals from other practitioners like you, but you have a really hard time getting referrals, say, from docs or from inpatient facilities or so on. Create some trending documentation of that so that other folks who are working with you and other people in the community can actually see that so that we can see some numbers. Using a clinician's notebook to kind of jot down for a 3, 6, 9 month period, what are the trends that you're seeing? Helps us to take an aggregate view or a big picture point of view of what's going on. Oftentimes, many of us in clinical care, in the day-to-day trenches, in the grind to try and keep things moving, run into this situation where we are so focused on what's in front of us and the issues in front of us that we don't really have time to kind of step back a little bit and get into the stratosphere. Whenever we start talking about change at a macro level, whether that change is administrative or legislative, we are actually talking about change from a big picture macro level. So we need as much data here as absolutely possible. And this also brings up the difference between legislative law and administrative law. Administrative law is how licensing boards go about the process by which they put into action the statute. So let's say, for example, that a statute says all supervision must be documented within 24 hours of the supervision session. All clinical sessions must be documented within 24 hours of the clinical session. The administrative body of the board would then operationalize how are they going to measure that? How are they going to be able to report back to the legislative body that that's actually happening? It's also one of the reasons why typically we don't find in law very specific language. Sometimes it happens, but not all the time. Legislative language tends to be in what's called legalese, in a very legalistic sort of language that sort of sets the tone so that the administrative body can then go in and do the nuts and bolts rules for how this is going to be implemented. And that's done so that the legislative body doesn't paint themselves into a corner by alienating a particular part of the workforce or changing a particular part of the scope of practice in such a way that there would be people who would not be served. Because at the end of the day, regardless of the conflict that we may feel against payer sources, people who are vulnerable, who need care, legislative folks are focused on them. It may not feel that way in terms of how legislative folks respond to requests from those of us who are providers and practitioners, It may not feel like they actually are interested in listening to us, but at the end of the day, they really are, because they are responsible for making sure that the fabric and the continuum of care is actually established. So, using this clinician's notebook is your first tool of intervention for trends. The second thing is becoming a trusted source to your legislators at the state level in particular. Folks who represent you in your state general assembly, at the Senate and the House level, folks in the Department of Health and Human Services, or whatever your particular state acronym is for that particular department. If you become a trusted source of data for what is happening when things are actually on the ground, in the street, when the rubber hits the road, what's really going on? The key thing is in this, and this is one of these fundamental rules of organizing. It takes forever to build a relationship with a representative person, and it takes seconds to destroy it. If I give misinformation, false information to a legislator that they then use, and it comes back to them, they will never speak to me again. Most legislators run for office. Most people in policy positions get into those positions because of one or two experiences that they've had personally, or experiences of people around them that they find really interesting that cause them to want to be a public service. It is impossible for folks to know everything that they need to know in these representative positions. Us on the ground expecting that of them is actually really disingenuous on our part, because we're setting people up to fail, and it's an easy way for us to get mad at them when they don't know. So our job is to help educate them. On a regular basis, one of the things that I do is to say, okay, so when the payer companies do X, Y, and Z to the process of payment, and this is what they do when they change the payment structure, here's what happens for my client, here's what happens for me as a business owner, here's what happens for my employees, and here's what happens to my capacity to serve this client over the lifespan of their need of care. And I can do all of that because I sit in all of those places. Again, being as authentic about that as I possibly can, so that I'm trying to give as much concrete, specific data. In the niche specialties that many of us as clinicians have, we have a wealth of information that other folks don't have. And because of this wealth of information, we are able to share with people the nuts and bolts of what happens when things don't go well. So the first tool I would give you today is use the clinician's notebook to give yourself a sense of being able to pick up on trends. The second thing that I would suggest to you is become a trusted resource. Reach out to the people who represent you, introduce yourself as a clinician, tell them what's going on in terms of your practice, and say, I would like to be able to talk to you about my experiences and be able to offer to you that information whenever you might need it. Those two places are good places to start as being an organizer as well as being a clinician. This is a lot of data to be able to kind of digest. And so please feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to have conversations with you. You can reach out to me at my website, jack-register.com, or at my email address, jack@jack-register.com. Again, thank you so much for being with me today, and I look forward to being with you again soon.